Hi, I'm Tyra G., your host of Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. Welcome again to our virtual global gathering of phenomenal listeners. Yes, you, fearsome and generous, humble and honest, in pursuit of new possibilities and purpose. Every week, we meet at the table for an hour to experience, educate, encourage, and empower each other through our joys and our lessons learned. We share topics that tradition tells us there's some things you just don't talk about. But here we live beyond both the judgment and the wreckage. We share aha moments and stories that have been left in our pockets for too long. Every week we start right where we are. Although many of your voices will speak light into the darkness, there's no insignificant person around this table. However, you must come dressed in your inner awesome, believing that impossible is merely a word. You're listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia. Cablecast on Cox and Verizon Fios, Channel 37, and Comcast, Channel 27 in Reston. And we are webcast worldwide on the internet at www.radiofairfax.org every Saturday evening at 8 p.m. No worries should you miss us. You can catch our archive, Frankly Speaking with Tyra G podcast on Apple Podcasts and TuneIn. And of course, if you just feel like connecting with me offline, that's easy too. Email me at Tyra@TyraGarlington.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you, Courtney Nero, for composing and performing our Frankly Speaking theme song and for naming it, I'm Listening. Over the past 3.5 years, storytelling on Frankly Speaking with Tyra G has been intentionally thematic across generations, cultures, and genre. Last year, our country was challenged in a way it hadn't been for over 100 years. An invisible enemy invaded our privacy, our routines, our expectations, and our hopes. Here in the United States, we began to see evidence of unparalleled challenge to our healthcare systems, our economy, and to wonder if our democracy would be strong enough to withstand the attacks on our Constitution. We learned a new vocabulary that seemed to incite combative emotions. Perhaps some of you, like me, have felt mentally and emotionally uncertain. It seems that everything that could be shaken was shaking, where noise, angry noise, seemed to be drowning out laughter and love. I had to focus on the power of positive thoughts, because I know thoughts can drive new possibilities just as they can limit outcomes. So, Frankly Speaking with Tyra G began to intentionally look for individuals, companies, organizations who were going against the tide, serving the underserved, and demonstrating that impossible is merely a word. All of these stories have centerpieces of harmony, authenticity, creativity, and determination to rise above that angry noise and to bring solutions that can walk us into a healthier, more inclusive nation and world. Frankly Speaking is paying tribute to intergenerational servant leaders and organizations who are using their servant hearts to heal and bring light into darkness. So to create a common thought space for today, in light of our current season of uncertainty, I will echo some of my favorite thoughts about service from best-selling author and acclaimed life coach, Iana Fonsan, from her 2000 book called until today. And I quote, "The greatest service I can offer is standing confidently in my power." Let me repeat that. The greatest service I can offer is standing confidently in my power. It doesn't serve you or the world for you to behave as if you are powerless. It's an insult to the creator of your life, in whose image and likeness you were created, for you to bow or bend to conditions and situations that are beneath you. It is arrogant to assume that you are incapable. You have gifts. You have the gift of intellect. You can think yourself in and out of any situation with which you are confronted. You have the ability to speak for yourself. You can defend yourself, promote yourself, encourage yourself, correct yourself. That is power. You have a heart through which you can experience love, grief, compassion, empathy, joy, peace, and an entire realm of emotions that let you know that you're alive. While you're alive, you can create, destroy, and rebuild something as insignificant as a Lego house, or something as significant as the capital city of a state. You can create another life. Through that life, you can share words of compassion, to express feelings of love, to know the joy of sharing, and to experience the wonderment of seeing life grow before your eyes. That is powerful. You are powerful. Now why don't you try acting like it? Stand up in your power. Embrace your power. Serve the world by bringing your power into your life. Commit. Say, "Today I am devoted to experiencing myself as a powerful being," end quote. Now, my storyteller today is a member of a historical and powerful service organization. However, she brought her own talents, gifts, creativity, and determination to the table and became a game changer and a leader. But before I introduce her, time travel with me and imagine the following young man in 1905, a 37-year-old attorney born and raised in quiet New England by his grandparents, and now living in a hustle bustle of Chicago. Paul Harris is single, conservative, and shy. Finally, with a steady income stream from his law practice, in contrast to the 9 years before where he traveled the world doing and exploring. He eats alone most nights. He uncomfortably tolerates the commercial exploitation, the social rest, the political corruption, and the religious fundamentalism that surrounds him. This was the years before television, movies, and social media. People entertained themselves by joining clubs organized for special interest, either political, social, or religious. But they were far too exclusive for Paul. However, on February 23, 1905, in cold Chicago, room 711 of the Unity Building, at 127 Dearborn Street in downtown Chicago, 37-year-old Paul Harris and three of his buddies, Sylvester, Gus, and Hiram, who were also disenchanted with the social environment, by the way, they all decided to become game changers. They claimed their power and created a club to foster friendship, fellowship, business connections, and a place to practice volunteerism that was inclusive, not exclusive. These four young men had no idea that standing in their own power that day, they were planting seeds that would yield a worldwide organization where today 1.2 members, People of Action, an army of an apolitical, multicultural, social, committed group are devoted to service above self. They named the seed they planted Rotary. Why Rotary? Because then they used to rotate office to office to office for their meetings. But here I am in 2021, one of the 1.2 million members of Rotary. 35,000 plus clubs work together globally to pursue and promote peace, fight disease, provide clean water, sanitation, and hygiene, save mothers and children, one of the keys to my heart, support education, grow local communities, and newly added, protecting the environment and providing disaster response. Well, without further ado, meet Ambreen Risby, a current young Rotary member and a delightful young woman embracing her power. Her introduction today will give just a peek into who she is as she adds another chapter to the Rotary Human Library book. Welcome to the table, Ambreen. How are you?
I'm good, Syra. How are you doing?
I am great. Let us begin this interview with you telling our audience what brought you to Rotary and kept you in the Rotary family and helped you move to the position of your current position, club president.
So I came into Rotary over 5 years ago. I came in as a speaker to talk about a cause that I was passionate about and about a movement that I have helped to co-found. And then after speaking to Rotary, I was reached back out by one of the members who had asked me to come and speak, and they asked me if I was interested to join the club. And my father, at that time, when he heard about it, he was like, of course you should join Rotary. It's one of the most prestigious institutions that you can be part of. So when I started the discussions, you know, with the, at that time, the club president and then my sponsor, they basically explained to me like what Rotary was all about and asked me about what kind of engagement I wanted to have. And I said, well, I'm very lousy at raising money, and I do not like asking money to people. So do not count on me for fundraising opportunities, but I will be there to help, you know, put events together and be out there to advocate for our club and also participate to service activities. So really, for me, joining Rotary was about giving back to our communities, and that's what motivated me and pushed me to join Rotary.
I'm going to put a comma there for a minute because you mentioned someone in your life that I happen to know was very influential. Let's just back up a second and talk about, you mentioned your dad. Let's talk about family, because you joined Rotary in Virginia, but Virginia was not the place you started out, right?
Yeah, that is correct. I'm originally from Pakistan, but when I was 2 years old, my father was basically had the honor to represent he was the first Asian, actually, to represent at Interpol. The headquarters of Interpol, which is the international police organization, as you may know, were in Paris, France at that time in the 70s, that's when my father was selected. There was an exam that he had to take, and among so many people that applied, he was the one who was selected. So he was not only the first Asian to be selected at Interpol, at the headquarters, but also the first one to represent his home country, which was Pakistan. So in the mid-70s, we packed our bags, and it was going to be a contract for just 2 years, but that contract became a long-time serving service for my father because he ended up being there for over 30 years and retired from Interpol. So I was very privileged, you know, with my culture and my religion to be raised in that blend. So I'm really a blend of East meets West, basically, as you may say, because I was very privileged to be raised in Paris. And then we moved to Lyon for the second part of my life, where the headquarters had moved as well.
So I'm hearing you. This is interesting because, you know, we talk, and I guess a disclaimer is we're in the same club. We talk frequently, but this is the first time I just clicked and said, wait a minute. Amvreen has had a global life, and she joins a global organization. So one of the things I always think about is you could be an individual in Virginia and impact someone's life in Africa. And that's kind of a way to summarize the power of Rotary. And so, all right, so you are East meets West. You come to Virginia, and I know I told you to put a comment in it, but I think your history is so colorful. Okay, so here you are. You join the club. Now you're president, but something happened in between joining the club and president. How did they prepare you?
So basically, I was engaged in board meetings, and I became the international chair when I joined the club. The international chair gave me the opportunity to join the Strategic Water Alliance leadership team. Basically, this is an alliance that includes 18 clubs from the district where we basically do global grants. And what that involves is building, you know, sanitation, giving access to clean water to people in Africa. And then we have, for the first time, moved from Africa to South America, to Honduras, where we are having our first global grant, actually, for this past Rotary year. So this has kind of helped me become acquainted and be, like, really, like, this is what I aspire to, right? Like, having this international mixture, but yet still being in Virginia and being able to make a difference around the world. And then, you know, when Catherine Ahern became president or was becoming president, she asked me 2-3 years before my term was coming up if I would be interested to be, at that time, the president nominee. So I had big shoes to fill in. Catherine became president, then you, Tyra, became president, and then I became president, which is this year. So powerful women became president of the Rotary Club of Tysons for the past 2 years, and then I came along after that, you know, the third year.
Now, there are a couple of things that I think our audience not really familiar with Rotary should we should share with them. Number one, anytime you're about to walk into and inhabit an office in Rotary, you are trained.
Yes.
You are trained in leadership. You're trained in the Rotary tradition. And, oh, by the way, for those who don't know, Rotary has clubs. Like I said, over 35,000 clubs, but we've got districts. Clubs report to districts. Districts report to areas. So, in other words, there's a hierarchy. So when Amvreen mentioned international project or international grants, our foundation, the Rotary Foundation, raises money so that we can do good all over the world. And that money is funneled in through grants, either district or international. And what's fun about what Amvreen's talking about with the Strategic Water Alliance is all of the clubs. You have to find clubs to collaborate with you, but you must find a club in the host country to collaborate with. So how many years have we been doing the Strategic Water Alliance, Amberine?
It's been over a decade.
Over a decade. And yeah. Why is water so important to underdeveloped countries? Why is it important to kids going to school?
Well, this is how then the kids get out of poverty, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they don't go to school, they will never be able to gain knowledge and never be able to achieve economic independence and not to have to depend on foreign aid and foreign countries. So water plays an essential role, and especially for the girls, because in those parts of the world, when a girl starts menstruating, if she doesn't have access to proper water sanitation to stay clean,
yes,
the girls are held back. They are held back, and they no longer go to school because, you know, the lack of availability, because of shame, because of lack of resources, and they end up not getting the education and become the women leaders that, you know, so many other countries produce. Water is so essential and taken for so much granted in those part, in our part of the world, in the developed world, that we don't realize how much impact it has in those countries. It also helps to keep them nourished, because that same water can flow in fields where they can, you know, produce and grow crops. Crops production helps them to become economically independent because it can generate income. So the water plays a role in education, in financial independence. You know, it's got such a big priority, and it's the essence and the basic of everything, you know, in those parts of the world.
Absolutely. And something I was looking at, the six things we did not mention, but clean water helps to fight disease. We know that. And also, it helps them grow economies if they can have the water to irrigate, et cetera, and support their crops. And the other thing that's exciting is a lot of the wells are built near schools. So
absolutely.
To accommodate.
Yeah, built near the schools. So Kenny can play both roles, not only allowing the kids to go to schools, continue their education, but at the same time, a lot of those schools have also fields next to them.
Yes.
So that they can produce, you know, like some kind of income. And that's where sustainability happens, right? Because if things break, if things need to be mended or repaired, you know, if there's like fields that are irrigated where they are like being able to produce some crops that they can sell, they can generate money, and then they can in turn maintain the schools and maintain, you know, the ablution box, the toilets, the bathrooms, all those things that are needed for those kids to be able to stay in school, and not mentioning drinking water as well.
Absolutely. And one of the things we need to make our audience aware of, Rotary isn't a hit and miss organization. We don't just do good and leave. When we do good, we make sure that what we have done is sustainable. So we transfer skills to
yes.
the host country so that they can, as Amberine so nicely described, they can maintain and sustain those things that have improved the quality of their lives. You mentioned international, and I don't want to slip away from that, because remember in the introduction I said my guest today brought her own examples of her walking in power and standing up and embracing it. I want you, Amberine, to tell them what you have started on your own as a nonprofit, and how that has blended in and you've been able to integrate it with your Rotary activities.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2018, I started a small nonprofit called the Brigade of Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And the Brigade of Mercy represents who I am as a person. You mentioned international. So, you know, with my experience and the diversity that I bring, being able to speak three languages, being raised, you know, from a different culture and religion in another country, coming here to the United States for my higher education, having a family here, getting married, working, and yet having had the great opportunity to travel around the world, I wanted to create an organization that would serve those principles and that would also represent my identity as a person. So the Brigade of Mercy not only serves people within the United States domestically, but also serves people internationally wherever I can. You know, so because, again, like I said, I'm a blend of various cultures, various experiences, various travels, you know, various religions. So I wanted my organization to be that way as well, and all inclusive, non-denominational, helping all kinds of race, religions, genders, identities. And that's why our slogan is Compassion Without Borders. Whether we are in the United States, where we are registered and chartered, it does not stop us from helping not only within where we are, but also communities outside, you know, the United States. So the way I blended the work that I was doing is I started during the pandemic this project called The Blessing Box. If you look it up today on Google, you will see that there is a term called a blessing box, but different, they're called differently. They're called a pantry. They're called a box. They're called a blessing box, you know. So they are available all across the United States, and actually they are expanding internationally as well, believe it or not. So what I did is there are two schools in Loudoun County where these boxes are currently operational. There's one more that's coming up in Arlington County. So I took that concept that I started with the Brigade of Mercy, and I brought it to the Rotary Club of Tysons, where I am serving as a president. And I said that during this pandemic, we need to support our communities because there's a great need out there in the homeless population, in the children's, in the youth, in the veterans population, for basic necessities, basic things that we just take for granted. And what are we talking about? We are talking about as simple as a hand soap, a toothbrush, a hand sanitizer, a cleaning household product, a mask, you know, a cereal bar, some healthy snacks, something for therapeutic needs as a coloring books. These items that I'm talking about are the ones that we are providing in those blessing boxes that we have managed to put six of them in our communities through the district grant that we got from our district at Rotary Club. And we have and we are continuing to serve these communities, certain areas in our communities, to provide them with the items that I just listed. And this is how we give back. And this is something that we can be very humble and proud of accomplishing, because I think we are the one of the first clubs to do this during this pandemic.
And successfully, I might say. Tell us where you've placed them thus far. I know we just started, but share with the audience.
Yes. The past few months, we started back in February because it took us a while to get the money from the grant, and then we were trying to explore on how to go about you know, with where to place them strategically, engaging with our charities, having multiple conversations, and of course it does involve getting approvals as well in some cases. But today, we have a blessing box at the Salvation Army headquarters in Fairfax, and actually Major Wilson is a Rotarian himself, you know, from the Rotary Club of Fairfax. And then we have a blessing box at a veterans population, homeless population in Washington, D.C., thanks to the partnership with the Rotary Club of Falls Church. The president of that club, Rene Calandria, is himself running a small nonprofit like I am called the Family Alliance of Veterans Care. So he helped me establish that relationship with that veterans population, which is basically supported by HUD. So I was able to place a box there. And then we have a box, two boxes that are being placed next week, actually this week, I must say, at PRS, which deals with health, mental health.
Yes.
They help basically adults get back on track with all mental issues. So these centers are where these clients come in. They are reopening actually as we speak this month. So they will serve the clients there. And then we have a box, two boxes, at a local retirement communities for elderlies, which serves a low-income population, a Section 8 population that is also supported by the government. That's where we have two boxes over there in that community. So that makes a total of six boxes.
And tell those who may not know about blessing boxes, how do you sustain them or maintain them? What happens?
Yeah, so with the case of the Salvation Army, when people are stopping by to give donations, they go and replenish them. Of course, we are in touch with our organizations. I usually check in with them every week, every 2 weeks to see if there's a need, and they usually let me know if, you know, I need to come in or somebody needs to come in to replenish them. So we have bought enough, thanks to the grant, you know, to have supplies out there. But the word is getting out there, and community people that are stopping by also make donations. So this is how we are trying to push the concept of sustainability so that it's not always, you know, our club who has to come in. And of course, the Brigade of Mercy will play a role as well, mobilizing, you know, donations, doing drives, creating awareness in the community. We are already doing it with the blessing boxes that we have put in the schools, where the schools are taking, you know, the key role to replenishing them, and we just step in when the stocks are low or in need. So that's exactly what we are trying to create, the same concept within our Rotarian blessing boxes.
So I'm hearing you say a couple of three things. One, you have an idea you want to serve. Two,
yes.
Collaboration is huge. You're collaborating with the people where you want to actually physically house the boxes. So they may have certain rules and regulations you have to adhere to because of their clients. Three,
yes.
You have to deal with constantly replenishing them. So you have to come up with a supply chain, which you are
yes.
doing. And four, collaboration with other Rotary clubs. So
yes.
a lot of positive things happen, and it's not just Rotary as a closed circle. If you think of us as a circle with spokes out into the community, and historically, Rotary has been a well-kept secret. And the thing that frustrated me most my first few years, I would say, oh, I joined Rotary. I get so excited, and people who love me would listen, and they'd say, Tyra, what's a Rotary? And then I had to start telling the story. And it's 116 years now?
Yeah,
116 years old, and we're still answering the question, what's a Rotary? And I guess it doesn't matter what the name is. It matters what we are doing. And I am just very proud. But, there's something else I want you to talk about. Before you even started with blessing boxes, weren't you doing something with Brigade of Mercy with Haiti or somebody?
Yeah, I with the Brigade of Mercy, we did partner with the Rotary Club of Centreville Chantilly.
Uh-huh.
They have a standing district grant that they do every year in Haiti.
Uh-huh.
So I work very closely with Dr. Sarah Joan. Our club usually does in-kind donations, but over the past few years, our members did not necessarily participate, but the Brigade of Mercy does participate. So we always provide every year when Sarah John travels around Thanksgiving time, you know, medical supplies and other things that are needed by the communities that she goes to. So she usually takes a lot of, like, over-the-counter medications and PPE equipment due to the pandemic that I was able to supply. Also, last time, a year ago, she was furnishing a classroom with musical instruments. We were able to contribute to that as well. So whatever the needs are, we are always helping out. Like this year, even though we are not participating officially as a club with the grant due to the Blessing Box district grant that we're putting in, as a Brigade of Mercy, I still, partner with Sarah John, Dr. John, to make sure that, you know, I'm helping out. So
And you
And also, one thing I wanted to say, Tyra, I did mention, you know, the Rotary Club of Falls Church helping with the veterans community, but also for the one we placed, the two boxes that we placed at the retirement community, the
Yes.
The current president of the Rotary Club of McLean is the one who was my contact. So I basically partner with the Rotary Club of McLean, the Rotary Club of Falls Church, and the Rotary Club of Fairfax to make these blessing boxes happen. So it was, again, a very collaborative effort. All I needed to is make the connection, tell them exactly what we are trying to do, and they helped to facilitate, you know, the type of the needs that they wanted and what kind of box they wanted, because I had to be creative, and that was where my husband came into place on, because some of the boxes had to be on wheels.
Yeah,
right?
Uh-huh.
So we had to add on to that to make sure, because they wanted to be able to move them around. So, you know, my husband did his magic by, you know, reinventing kind of like the box and trying to create like something that would work. So by adding on additional wheels on the structures. And then, of course, everyone had a different need on how they wanted to be, enclosed or not enclosed, you know. So that's, we had to tailor it to the needs. So thanks to the partnership of those clubs, we were able to do that.
Don't you just love it? Partnership, collaboration. While we are talking, you and I should probably give a plug to another collaboration we have between Tysons and McLean, our
Yes.
Flags for Heroes program.
Yes, 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 yes. I'm very, very honored. Actually, I must say that I'm actually embarrassed not to have gotten involved with this amazing project that our past district governor, Ronnie Chenker, kicked off a few years ago. A great fundraising opportunity, but also a great salute to the veterans of our country, right? It's not about just fundraising, but it's also saluting heroes, not only in our lives, but heroes also that served officially in our country. And the beauty of this project is that, you know, as the country was being divided, you know, it made me feel absolutely fantastic to come out on that field with Bob Jensen, who is spearheading, you know, as the chair of this project, you know, and to be able to put out flags with the Girl Scouts, you know, with my own daughter, who is part of the Girl Scouts and who is taking on this project officially to obtain her highest award in Girl Scout, which is the Gold Award. So it has so many significance when it comes to humanity, a salute to humanity, a salute to our veterans who suffer often and who are often neglected, unfortunately, but also have the charitable aspect to it, because whatever money we can make, we can get, we hope to be able to use it to, like, maybe for the blessing box at the veterans community, or to to donate to other veteran communities in need.
And the thing that we like to do, and the exciting thing actually about the pandemic, because we have these events where we have displays of flags around the McLean community in Virginia, and we have three events, Memorial Day, July 4th, and Veterans Day. And we do it in collaboration with the American Legion. But here's the other piece of it that is so great. That has been traditional, right? So we have the displays out for a week at a time, but we have a ceremony on one of those designated days that is carried forth thus far in on Memorial Day and Veterans Day by the American Legion with Rotary participation. But here's the fun. Now, the pandemic. How many heroes emerged as a result of the pandemic? How many people kept us alive because they brought us food, took away our trash, took care of the whole medical community that saved lives? So we're honoring, we have expanded Flags for Heroes to include those new heroes. And what we do is we sell flags to anyone that you as an individual have acclaimed as a hero in your life. And that's the fun thing. I always buy one for mom and dad because they are the reason I am who I am. So we're excited about that. And what Ambreen just kind of said in one sentence, She talked about her daughter and the Scouts. But as a mother, her servant heart has become intergenerational with the Scouts. And we have the Boy, well, now they're called the Scouts, not the Boy Scouts, are also participating. And what they do, they dig the holes to install the flags. So what we have is community involvement, community visibility. We are saying thank you, and we are honoring. And I think in these times, we need to focus on the positive, the gift, the love. So I want to thank your daughter and the Scout Girl Scout troop on the radio for what they are doing, because I know this is community service for them, but they still had to say, I want to do it. And they had to do it. So I'm very proud of that. And I'm proud of the Scouts as they are helping us as well. We do have sponsors. People have said, oh, that's a good idea. So we have Learner, the Learner Company. We have Orr Real Estate. We have Amazon Wire Services. And what am I missing? PenFed. Yes, PenFed. And we're excited. And what we like to do is encourage people to become sponsors as well as buy flags. So if
And the great thing, Tyra, also to add is you did mention that right now the flags are very localized in the McLean area. But thanks to Learner's partnership, and as you know, Learner has a huge real estate presence in
Yes.
We are going to be able to expand that program, hopefully either on July 4th, but definitely for sure on Veterans Day this year, where we're going to have an amazing display of flags, which is going to be so prominent between International Drive and Route 7, Leesburg Pike. So I think that that's going to be a huge undertaking and a beautiful undertaking, because that is a much, much bigger
and
area.
And visible, yes.
Compared to the one in McLean, which is also great as well, not to undermine the McLean location. But this gives us a huge opportunity, to be visible, especially in all the big corporations that are now headquartered in the Tysons area.
I actually had to change our website to say in the McLean and Tysons communities, because I was looking forward. Also, we want to thank Learner for partnering with Tysons with our 5K. They are our host sponsor. And so I guess we're doing a dance with Learner, and we're so proud that they have joined us and believe in what we're doing. So now I have questions. I guess we should get back to your presidency.
Yes.
What would you consider? I want to look at two things. Your presidency is about to expire. In a month. So let's look back. What has been the most difficult thing, and what has been the most rewarding thing for you in this past year?
The most difficult thing is when the pandemic started, right? In March of last year, the country stopped breathing. The world stopped breathing. Everything stopped. We were absolutely in a stopped status quo moment where people couldn't go out anymore, businesses were shutting down and everything. So as you were ending your presidency, I was inheriting like a problem, like, okay, how are we going to do this, right? As simple as the installation, or how are we going to hold our meetings? What are we going to do? So we had to be creative, and we had to have the discussions. And we were one of the only and probably the first club to be in the district again to be able to pull up hybrid meetings. What does that mean? That means that people who were members, who were vulnerable, could stay at home and still be able to log in and attend our meetings. And then the members who were more adventurous and who were less at a less risk factor, I must say, were able to continue attending the meetings in person at the Tower Club, which was our new location that we decided to move to at the beginning of my presidency. So we were set up. We tested the equipment, the technology. Our blessed treasurer, Bert Heacock, was at Tower Club while I was at home. We were trying to figure out the technology. We tested it, and it worked. It really worked.
Yes, it does. It works.
Yes, because you were a virtual member while I was my in-person member, and we had our challenges sometimes, but we made it work. And my challenge was to make everyone feel included and make sure that they were still part of the club, keeping the club together, whether you were virtual or whether you were in person, right?
Yes.
That was, I think, the biggest challenge. And I must say that we did it. Of course, in January of this year, we had to again halt the in-person because the virus was taking a toll and a peak. So for one quarter, we stopped the in-person, but we were still continuing virtually. We maintained our second and fourth meetings of the month, and we also maintained a virtual happy hour where we had lots of fun. We had dance lessons. We played Jeopardy. We're going to have bingo this month. We invited people of interest, like, you know, Lori spoke about orchids. We talked about different kind of topics that people were interested in. So we stayed together as a club, and I'm very, very grateful for that because it is not an easy thing to pull off. But the great news is we're going to continue doing this because the pandemic is not going anywhere. This has also attracted new membership, people that are not able to commute to the Tysons area but wanting to come back as members. And so we have some people that were members, that were presidents during their time when they were members of Rotary Club of Tysons, and they are able to join back again. And we have gained also new members in this pandemic. So really, like, the challenge has been to keep people together, but then the blessing has been to gain new members as well.
Absolutely. And I think technology has, become the critical success factor in our lives, and that it made our homes schools and offices and barbershops and churches, all kinds of things. But one of the things that I know you and I experienced together, technology has done something else for Rotary. We can visit meetings, like we went to Malaysia, didn't we go to, you and I visited, and the speaker, because we have speakers generally at every meeting, the speaker for that day was talking about how to leverage the use of LinkedIn technology, which I thought was interesting. But now I've done several meetings and seminars that are global. So we're getting to see Rotary, physically zoom in and look at our Rotary counterparts all over the world. So I think that has been a blessing. I think you're absolutely right. Let me ask you something. What do you think, considering diversity, equity, and inclusion, what do you think are the challenges that Rotary has or doesn't have making that work? Because we are trying desperately to be inclusive. What do you think's working and not? What do you think's going on there?
So I think there is a lot of communication and education, right? And committees and things that are being put up. And I know that Rotary and also our current district governor and even the past district governor and the future district governor are taking this very seriously. But Tyra, this is not something that's going to that we can measure a success that quickly, because this is something that even our country is being challenged and trying to figure out how to do that. With all the incidents, the things that have happened, even corporate America is struggling to figure out, what does that mean? How do we make this happen? How do we make this successful? So I think that Rotary is being very proactive, and I, as a minority, as a woman, as a person of color, truly appreciate, you know, the communication, the push, the mention, but again, this is not something that can be solved, so quickly. I think it's going to take us years to be able to come up with a working program or a system or something that flows naturally, because this is not a challenge just only for Rotary, but this is a challenge in the United States. This is a challenge for corporate America. This is a challenge for businesses. This is a challenge in schools. This is something very serious that has surfaced because we were bleeding internally, and now that it's open, the wound is open, we are trying to find a solution as a community, as a country, as people of multiple organizations, of members of corporate America. And I think that there's no easy answer, but I just know that we are trying to bring people together as Rotarians. I love the theme that we had for this year, Rotary Opens Opportunities. That means that there's no stopping us, you know, trying to be creative, trying to be innovative, trying to come up with ideas and different things. And we are doing it, you know, with this pandemic. We figure out a solution on how to stay together. We are Zooming in. We're calling each other. We're communicating. We're FaceTiming. We are trying to stay together. We're trying to push initiatives together. We're still doing grants. We're still doing, you know, projects. We're still feeding communities. But this question of inclusion, equity is a very sensitive thing that is probably going to take a couple of iterations, a couple of back and forth, a couple of mistakes, a couple of pushing forwards but going backwards, you know, before we can figure out an answer. That is my opinion.
Yeah.
I think you are at the forefront of this, because I know this is very dear to you, and you do, you are part of a committee as well that is spearheading that effort. So I'm quite sure that you have additional things to add on to what I'm saying here.
Well, I'm not going to add anything. I think you've done a beautiful job. I think what I would say is it is not change, it is a transformation. That means it's going to have to come from the inside of people out. Whenever you do that, it's unpredictable, it's challenging, it's frightening at times, because people don't quite understand when they give something doesn't mean they're losing something. So we have a lot of work to do there. And I know we could talk forever, but you know I have to ask you to read your letter.
Okay.
Would you do that for us now?
Absolutely. I am ready for it.
Okay, you go right ahead.
Okay. Hello, Ambreen. What a journey, no? The Brigade of Mercy, Rotary, what a long way you have come. Your journey has been incredible. A few years ago, you could have never imagined or foresee what was coming. The Brigade of Mercy has grown so much. Being able to help to overcome so many catastrophes, like the one in Beirut, the pandemic, or the current one in India, is huge. Brigade of Mercy can be counted upon. And now, the Blessing Box, feeding and helping communities. Gift to the communities and your legacy as a Rotary Club president. Your faith, your willpower, your passion, deliverance have never failed you. I hope and pray that you can continue achieving the impossible and overcoming any obstacles that may come your way. There's so much satisfaction, so much reward in pursuing others. People in the community are noticing your work and learning about your efforts. People. Unexpected help. Unexpected. As long as your intentions are clear, true to yourself, we'll continue succeeding. I wish you continued success.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, I lost you for a minute.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Ambreen. Thank you so much. Wow. Yes. I've been taking all this in. Let me pull up something here. Some spiritual soul food to take with you, because I think it's in keeping with everything we've been talking about here. It's something called There Is Always More.
Yes.
If by chance no one has told you that they love you today, I would be honored to be the first to say, I love you today.
Oh.
I love you because you are and have been so willing to grow. And my, how you've grown. You've grown from struggling to searching, from trying to do something to learning how to do. You've grown from fear to having faith to demonstrating your courage. You've grown in many ways, consistently demonstrating your willingness and courage to take the next step, the step toward the profound and divine wisdom buried within you, the step toward knowing more about yourself. This is why I love you. You're profoundly divine. I want everyone to understand you are worthy of giving and receiving. Believe you are new, every moment new. Your time, your energy, your mind, the people who come into your life, they're all gifts and they're infinite. They belong to you and everyone else. My guest today has been Ambreen Rizvi of the Great Brigade of Mercy and Blessing Boxes and Rotary, president of the Tyson's Rotary Club. Thank you, Ambreen. To all of you, your seat at the table is guaranteed. I look forward to the next time. Until then, remember, you are stronger than you feel, smarter than you think, more beautiful than you know, and more loved than you can ever imagine. You are chosen. You're important. So treat yourself like someone you love. I'll be here living intentionally and loving you. This is Tyra G, frankly speaking. Thank you.